Blog Talk Radio.
The Unknown Radio Network, consisting of the very best selection of paranormal internet radio shows anywhere on the web. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Unknown Radio Network.
Right here on the Unknown Radio Network, and happy Memorial Day weekend, everyone. I'm Kevin with Unknown Paranormal.
I'm Martin with Bravo Paranormal.
And this is Jeff, the Paranormal Patriot.
Thanks.
Oh, man. Well, I finally got to do something this weekend with
wow.
The family. The oh. First part of the weekend, I was helping a family with a residential case. They called up there in the week. So we went up there Friday and then again yesterday. So hopefully one of them that I helped and continue to help will be listening tonight. So, hello to you. You know who you are.
Nice.
And, we're fishing today, boys. It's been a while since I've gone fishing with old pops. Got up at crack of dawn, got out to the lake. It was real nice, cloudy. Rained on us for a little while, which was pretty badass because I was in my swimming trunks. So, I didn't have to jump in the lake to get wet. And, Then in the afternoon, the drunkards and idiots came out on to the lake with their wave runners and skis and,
yep.
You know, you're supposed to, when you're running your boat, you know, down the lake, you're supposed to have a life jacket on, and I didn't see one damn life jacket anywhere. All I saw was people with their shirts off and cold beer in their hand, which is fine, but, man, somebody's going to get hurt doing that crap. But, it was bad because the lake was so freaking choppy. There was like at one point we were trying to go back to the boat ramp, and I had the boat up to about 50 miles an hour, and there was some times me and Dad came flying out of the lake because we hit 3 and 4 foot waves coming because everybody was out there farting around on the lake. But we caught some fish. We caught some fish, and I can say for the first time, I cleaned my first two fish. Dad never taught me how to do it growing up. So we had a father-son moment where he taught me how to clean a fish, which was not fun, but I did.
He's like, stop throwing up, boy. This is how it gets done.
I did that once when I was about 19. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to pay the professionals to do this. I'm happy with that.
Well, it's one of those things now, boys, because of money situations, I was like looking at those fish, and I'm like, I'll be damned if I throw them back. They're keepers, and I need some food in my freezer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to clean those bastards so that I have some food.
Nice. You know,
yeah, Go ahead, Mark.
Hello? Oh, I was going to say, you could have filleted them and not even gone through the process of cleaning them.
Well, I attempted to try to do that with the first one and didn't get a lot of meat out of it. So the second one, I didn't fillet it. I left it on the rib cage, but I got everything else off, tails, fins, all that good stuff, and the tail in the skin. So, yeah.
Hey,
I took the easy route the second attempt.
Yeah, we still haven't been able to catch a fish like the one Stacy caught 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Yeah, dude, her first. Like not even joking, man. We get out here, you know. I'm like, oh yeah, let's go fishing at the pond. I cashed in a couple times, catch this like, I don't know, eight inch bass. And Stacy was like, I want to try. I'm like, okay, fine. So I give her the fishing pole. She throws it in, and she's like, I think I'm stuck. And oh, yeah. Yeah, she was reeling her lure all slow. I was like, you need to pick up the speed on that. You're not supposed to reel a lure all slow. And then she's like, oh, man, I think I'm stuck. And then I was like, it's probably a branch. Just reel it in. We'll get it out of the pond. And then you see this, like, a foot and a half bastard just jump out of the water. It looked at me in the face, and it was like, I was like, oh. That's all. I was like, reel it in. We pull it out. It was probably, 8 pounds, maybe? It was probably the biggest fish I've ever caught, or Stacy's ever caught.
Damn.
But, yeah.
This summer, I want to go deep sea fishing.
Yeah.
I've never done that, but you see, I don't want to go out there and, you know, like everybody else and catch like a marlin or something like that. That's nice. I want to catch a whale.
You know what you should do is take a Bowie knife with you, dive in the water, and stab a whale in the gills, and then drag it out.
Hell yeah. I'll be like a Rambo deep sea fishing.
Because there's no better story than that.
Absolutely.
Now, a disclaimer is the comments and ideas on this show does not necessarily reflect the ideas of Unknown Radio Network or Unknown Paranormal Radio.
But they do reflect my ideas.
But yeah, that's how we do it down here in Texas. And then tomorrow, going four wheel riding and go a little mudding and stuff. So. Going to finish it out this weekend, but happy Memorial Day Happy Memorial Day weekend, because Memorial Day is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And just like to say condolences and, you know, our due respects to all branches of the military, not only the ones that have served and passed away, but also the ones that are currently active and protecting our country. So
nice.
That's what it's all about this weekend. So just wanted to throw that out there.
And those that have served and are still around.
That's
not necessarily active, but they're still here.
That's right. Like my dad, he served in the Air Force during Vietnam. So yeah. But yeah, man, that's pretty much it. Paranormal wise, man, when it rains, it pours. The case I worked on this weekend, they called Monday and then also Monday night, a case that I'm already working on called. I had to work with them. And then Tuesday, I got a call from another person locally here with the second residential case. So I have three cases going on right now.
Wow.
Yeah. But
awesome.
That's what we do. That's what we do. We're there to help people, and we'll continue to do that. And so the one that I'm working on now is kind of crazy. It's involving about five or six family members, and they're scattered. They're not all in the same location. One's in Henderson. One lives in Waco. One lives in El Paso. So they're all having activity. So, yeah, that's... I gotta interview every one of them to try to get the puzzle pieces put together.
You know, I say this all the time, but just once I want to go investigate somebody's house and like physically witness like a couch being thrown across the room.
Oh man!
No, don't wish for it. It'll happen.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay. I go to the refrigerator to get myself a Corona, which of course are not twist off, and now I can't find the bottle opener.
Do what?
I go to the refrigerator to get myself a Corona, which of course are not twist off, and now I can't find the damn bottle opener.
Oh. Put the edge of the bottle on a desk and then, like, slam your hand on the top of it.
Yeah, I don't trust that.
That's like the ghetto way of taking it off.
Oh, here,
or,
I got it.
Or no, you can use the bottle opener, also known as the striking plate on your door.
call up the search party. I found it.
Awesome.
While Kevin's working on three cases of paranormal, I'm working on a case of Corona.
Stacy was actually talking about getting Corona today.
Where'd Kevin go?
I'm here. Well, our guest is on hold, so let's go ahead. And you got the bio in front of you? I can't seem to find it.
I will get it here. Just give me like a 30 seconds. Time me.
Oh, wait
now.
A minute. Here we go. Let's see.
To the Google Mobile.
I found it.
Okay.
Our guest tonight is Christina George, psychic medium. Christina is a paranormal investigator and psychic and is founder of PPRS, Psychic and Paranormal Research Society, where she runs two divisions of her group, which investigate all things paranormal, including UFOs, abductions, Bigfoot, chupacabras, etc. Since Christina grew up as a child psychic with no one to answer questions for her about what was happening, so she decided to start a mentoring program for children and adults with abilities. Christina speaks about her experiences growing up as a psychic, and her near-death experience, as well as being attacked by a demonic entity, attends conferences all over the U.S. and to help get info and evidence out, she hosts Paranormal Connections on the Scepter Radio Network every Monday night. Christina is dedicated to getting the evidence out to the public about what goes on the other side. Christina, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Awesome.
How are you tonight?
Oh, not too bad.
I'm somebody.
I'm doing much better now that I got my bottle of beer open.
I know you were having. It sounded like you were having a lot of trouble with that. It was starting to be kind of concerning.
Okay. I really don't drink very, very, very often at all. And so when I'm in the mood for a beer, I got to have a beer.
You're really in the mood for it, huh?
And I want it.
Says every alcoholic I've ever known.
I really don't drink that much. I bought this case of beer probably about a month ago, and I was maybe drinking four.
I think they call those binge drinkers. Just kidding.
Is that a challenge? Is someone challenging me to binge drink tonight?
No.
Kevin, quit talking about it. No. Kevin,
I'm insane.
Jeff, just control yourself tonight because I don't know how I would play Pastor Jeff on the radio.
It could be done somehow. I challenge you to do this.
Because just so Christina and Martin know, back a long time ago, we were at a party when we were in college. Well, we were still in college, but we weren't in that college. I was at SFA. No, it was an alumni deal. Anyway, long story short, Jeff had a little too much to drink and started talking with a Brooklyn accent and playing his guitar, and he was getting on everybody's nerves. So, like, he would start talking, and I would say, hey, let's walk over here, and there'd be a group of people standing around talking, and he would start talking to them, and then I would walk away. So I passed Jeff on to them, and the cycle continued throughout the night where people would pass the Jeff off to someone else.
Somebody threw a stick off into the woods, and I went and chased it.
That was me.
You got to love your friends that remember all of these moments to, you know, just wait for that perfect moment, you know, to then bring it all back.
Well, Kevin's been doing this to me ever since then. Like the very next day, he calls me up. Hey, you know what you did last night? It's like, really? I woke up at 9 a.m. on the bathroom floor and had no idea how I got there. So, no, I don't know what I did that night.
Oh, wow.
But you did talk to a truck thinking it was a human. You were looking for somebody, and you ended up talking to a vehicle, and I was laying in the bed of my truck laughing my ass off.
That was my truck, and I was hugging it, and I remember I was looking for my girlfriend at that time, who, incidentally, was about as affectionate as the truck was.
Lord.
It was an easy mistake on my part.
Let's shift the conversation back to paranormal.
And I'm wired today. You know, normally I'm pretty tired at this time of day. Well, I don't have to go to work tomorrow, so I'm pretty freaking wired right now.
All right, amen on that.
Yeah, I don't go to work tomorrow either, so.
It's going to be interesting tonight.
Now, Christina, you grew up with psychic abilities, correct? And you really didn't have anybody to go to about what you were experiencing?
Correct. I actually started seeing, you know, spirits as young as I can remember, probably around 2 years old. And, you know, from 2 until about 11, everything was good. I mean, they were my friends. I had mentioned them a few times to, you know, family members, which either got me yanked to the doctor's office, you know, or it would get me, you know, yanked to the church one way or the other, you know, because I said anything about it. So it's something I kind of just kept to myself after a while because nobody believed me. So it was something I kind of had to deal with. And then, like I said, it was very strange that right about the preteen stage, 11, 12, it started to change. And, you know, I mentor children and even adult psychics, with abilities. I have all different kinds of abilities. But it's something that's reported really across the board. I've been seeing it a lot. And we start to see that, you know, when children are seeing spirits, they seem to be very friendly when they're young. But they kind of take a turn for a little bit of a darker side around the preteen pubescent, you know, stage. And which is exactly what happened to me. So, you know, I'm 46, so it's not like I'm a teenager or anything. So back then, it was definitely not something that you talked about. You know, talking about you could see spirits and things would either get you on meds or get you locked up in a padded cell. So, you know, we didn't have people, you know, like now people hear I'm a psychic. And, I mean, I get, you know, probably 20, 30, you know, messages on Facebook. I get emails, you know, every day asking me questions, needing my help, you know, wanting advice, you know. Back 20 years ago, you know, if you said you were psychic, you know, first things that people thought of was, you know, a bandana and a crystal ball and, you know, that you were going to scam them out of some money. So it definitely shows you the difference, you know, that time makes. And, you know, when it's more, depending on what's being put out there, when there you're being told there's no such thing as ghosts, there's no such thing as UFOs, there's no such thing as this or that. And then all of a sudden, more people start having their own experiences. They start catching it on, you know, pictures and videos, you know, randomly, you know, all kinds of places and reasons. And we're in a different time where everybody has a camera now or a camera phone. So, you know, now we're starting to kind of switch it where now people are coming out about having activity. They're also, you know, looking for investigative teams because now they know who to go to. I mean, I've been investigating over 10 years professionally, and back when I would tell people I was going, it was usually by word of mouth that you got a case. You know, somebody knew you did this. But, you know, you try to get some people to go with you. I couldn't find anyone to go with me. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get people sending me, you know, emails and stuff asking if they can join my group. You know, and I've got 500, you know, followers in each of the two groups that I run now that follow us and what we do. So, you know, we're definitely looking at a different time, which is good, but it's also now put a whole, we went from there's no such thing as ghosts and there's no such thing as psychics or scammers and everything to now we've got all these shows on TV about them. But the one thing that now that twist that they have it is everything that is paranormal is something demonic, which,
yeah,
as investigators we know is not true.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the twists that I'm really not liking about, say, the paranormal industry is like everything now is demonic, you know. You can't even turn on an episode without facing some kind of demonic entity. Just like, come on.
Right, right. And it really does a disservice to those of us out there, you know, that are researching and that we are groups that we are going out and helping, you know, clients because – you know, I get more clients that, you know, will call and they're just petrified. And, you know, the first thing that they say is, I think that, you know, there's a demon in my house or there's something, you know, after me and my family. And even when you ask them, you know, it's just like maybe something falls off the shelf or even something off the shelf, you know, and all of a sudden it's a demon after them, you know. And I just about every interview I've ever done, I always have this one case that always really stuck out to me. And I had this woman who called me and said she thought she had demonic activity. And I said, well, what makes you think that? And she says, well, I was watching that Zach Bagans show. And she said, and everything that I was seeing on there was just like it was at my house. And he said it was demonic. So she's like, and she says, I need you to come out. I just need you to come and check it out. You know, you'll be able to tell if it what's going on. You'll know that I'm telling the truth. And so, you know, once again, I get all kinds of crazy stories, and 99% of them come out to be absolutely true. So I said, okay, I can't make it there. This was like on a Monday. I said, I can't make it there till Thursday. And I gave her my personal phone number in case anything changed. And like literally like the night or two after that, she calls me at 3:30 in the morning in tears, saying, I need you to come, and I need you to come now. Like, you have to come by the morning time. And I said, what happened? And she said, it tried to kill me tonight. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, she was sitting there, and she was crying. She said, you know, she's just been very, very upset about her mother's passing. And, or actually, at the time, she didn't tell me about her mother passing. She just said she was crying on the bed, and she was very scared and stuff, and she'd just been really stressed out. And she said that all of a sudden, she felt something sit next to her, and she could see a depression in the mattress. And she said, and all of a sudden, she felt something wrap around her and start squeezing her to the point that she couldn't breathe. And so, you know, of course now I'm taking it, you know, even more serious, and I'm like, all right, if they're reporting this, I got to get out there. So I went out, you know, first thing in the morning, went out, and I walk in, and the first thing that I encounter is a spirit of this woman who is kind of like, I'm glad you're here. You know, she's like, I'm trying to, you know, she's trying to console her daughter and let her daughter know that she was there. She had just recently passed, which was a lot of the stress this woman was under. And she said she was crying the other night. She says, I've tried to let her know that I'm here. And, you know, like by knocking things over, letting her know, touching her, things like that, and it was scaring her. So she said she was crying. I sat down next to her and wrapped my arms around her and just hugged her. And that was what she was feeling, and her mind was telling her that it was trying to squeeze the breath out of her, you know, the life out of her. So when I explained it to her, you could see that the fear just, like, melted away from her face. And
yeah.
It completely changed and softened, and she says, you got to be kidding. And I said, well, you know, your mom is here, you know, she's basically here just because of you. You're grieving so badly, you know, and she just kind of, here letting you know she's around you. And, you know, she was just like, well, that's okay. Now I don't need your services anymore, but thank you so much for my answers. And it was the end. But, you know, that just shows you that, you know, what people hear, you know, what people are taught and what people see, they take very much to the truth, especially when you call it reality TV instead of entertainment
right.
TV.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's the other thing is when you're talking to people and they're like, oh, it happened like this on Ghost Adventures. You're like, you can't do that. Don't take what you see on TV as you know, truth or even what you read on the internet. I mean, you gotta, you know, I guess kind of teach people not to take things in so seriously, you know?
Well, but the only thing is that, you know, they're going to the things that they have to give them some instruction. And so if what
right.
we put out there is not truthful, you know, then of course we're putting a bunch of garbage out there and we're making it harder for people to really understand what's really going on. So it makes it very easy for them to get confused. So
yeah, yeah.
It's great to have, you know, shows like your show and my show. And, you know, that's the whole reason I started a radio, you know, when I was offered many radio shows and I turned them down and then I finally decided to go ahead and do one. But it was not to become well-known or, you know, famous or anything like that, because everything I do is for free. I don't get paid for anything that I do. So, you know, it's definitely not for that. But it was just to give me a platform to be able to put the information out that I thought was important to get out, you know, and factual, instead of a bunch of entertainment, you know, stuff that's being thrown
right.
out that's not very real.
Yeah.
I just don't watch anything like Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters or anything like that.
Yeah, well, the problem I had with Ghost Adventures was a few things, and I'm probably going to get a bunch of hate mail now because of this, but when it first came out, the one thing that I got from him was that, you know, it did not seem very legitimate at all. And mm-hmm. The whole episode that he had where he was up at the Preston Castle out here where I live, and he had, it was the castle where the house mother was killed by the two children. And so he was acting as if he got possessed by this woman. And first of all, I actually was a dossier at the Preston Castle and gave tours. So one thing that I came to find out after it was taped, number one, was that this person that, you know, was killed, first of all, did not have an apartment inside of the castle. She had one on the grounds, but not in the castle. So when he says, oh, I found her apartment, and there was this, you know, lonely chair sitting right in the middle of the room, and when he sits down, all of a sudden he gets this blank stare and, you know, all this stuff. When I finally go over to the Preston Castle, you know, and I start, you know, asking some questions, well, I find out that, you know, they're basically banned in about six different places around California because of how the things that they set up and then put out as if it was true on TV. So, you know, I was kind of like, oh, geez. And then the other thing was all the provoking he does. And
oh, yeah.
All of us who really do this, and once again, are really serious, know that that's the cardinal sin. Like, you don't go and do that, especially when you are going to a client's home. Because if you really want to make things bad, yeah, go ahead and go provoking in someone's house, and you'll definitely make it worse for them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And once again, we get a lot of these groups. You know, we get all these little groups that's popped up nowadays. And all you have to do is be able to, you know, be proficient on Facebook to be able to create a page and, you know, have a friend or two to go with you, and all of a sudden you're a paranormal investigator. And when clients are looking for groups, you know, they have no idea. They go and they just search Google. And then they, you know, if they're in California and it says, you know, Paranormal Investigators of California, then they might pick that one. They pick it by the name that they like. It has nothing to do with, you know, not too many people do a whole lot of research into paranormal groups, you know, that are online or on Facebook. You know, they just pick somebody. And a lot of times you've got, you know, groups that have got together that will say that they're experts in the field, but yet they're like, their teens like 18 and 19 years old. So, you know, that really makes you wonder right there. And, you know, they don't know what they're doing. So they're coming in for a thrill, you know, and my opinion is, you know, if you've seen this on TV and now you just want a thrill, you know, you're a ghost enthusiast, great. Go to the cemetery. Go to known haunted locations. But don't go to private clients' houses acting like you can help them, because you can't. And then you end up, you know, I get calls from people saying, you know, I've had one, two. I even had a client that had three previous teams come through her house and couldn't help her. And I came through with my team, and first time, boom, you know, it's gone. So like I said, it's been good and it's been bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing about paranormal TV is that you have everybody wanting to be in paranormal, but that's also the bad thing is that, you know, you have everybody wanting to be in paranormal. Just like, I've also ran across, like, talking to some people, and they're like, oh, yeah, our team has, you know, 8 years of experience, and there's, like, eight members of maybe 1 year of experience apiece, you know?
Right. Lying about, you know, their expertise, their amount of time that they've been doing it, their cases, things like that. You know, you ask them for, you know, evidence of, you know, past cases that they've done. They don't have any, you know. I mean, you can tell a lot, you know, when you deal with groups. But like I said, for the public, you know, they're not trained like we are. So they don't see the things that we see. And the novice, you know, stuff that people with, you know, haven't been doing this for very long that are doing and the mistakes they're making. So, you know, you don't really get it out. So that's why I said it's good for there to, you know, be some shows and be some groups that, you know, hopefully, you know, will get out there and, you know, talk about this. That's why I like to go to the events, to be honest. When I started, I never did. And I started doing a lot of interviews and meeting a lot of people. And so people started wanting me to come in and speak at the different events and conventions they were having, and you know, it was a really great platform to be able to get a lot of information out to people and be able to help a lot of people at one place. So it was kind of good because, you know, you really have to get that information out and in a lot of different places, you know, for it to really make an impact.
Right. Now, when being a medium, when you go to these events, Are you like ever overwhelmed by all the attachments people bring with them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I will tell you something that just recently happened to me, and it's actually a big part of my life, but it was kind of strange how it happened. I told you that when I was young, I had my abilities and it, you know, the teens, it changed. And at that point, this dark entity showed up in my life. And it was a hooded entity, which for many years did not show itself to me. And I was going through a lot. I was going in foster care, and it came out that I had, you know, been physically, mentally abused and molested, and all these different things were coming out, and all of a sudden this dark thing shows up. And it's trying to... Huh?
Oh, I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's trying to convince me that, you know, life is not worth living. Like, look at all this stuff that's happening around. you know, I'm trying to reach out to different places to and people to help me understand what's happening around me, and nobody believes me. And this thing was trying to make me, you know, really feel that life was not worth living. And at one point, it even, I felt, what really scared me was it showed itself to me one time. I was standing there, and, you know, I'm Catholic. I was brought up Catholic and all these different things. And, you know, I'm like, okay, if you're such a bad spirit and you've got so much power and control, you know, why do you hide behind a cloak? Why don't you show yourself to me? Now, that tells you, you know, I'm young, because I sure as hell wouldn't do it now, you know, do something like that. But, and I asked and I did receive. And this thing, you know, takes its hood off of its robe. And what I see is the actual, like, any picture that you would ever see that would be the depiction of Satan or the devil is what this thing looked like. And it scared me so bad. He said, "You want to see how much control I have?" And he literally, it caused me to pick up a razor blade and literally start cutting my wrist, but not across, but up and down. And, but it's whispering to me, all you have to do to make this all quit is just push a little harder, which now I realize is because I have the free will. And so it really didn't have the control over me to kill me, but it could mess with my mind enough to convince me to take my own life. And it scared me so bad that I was able to kind of shake this. I went to the library. I spent hours searching through books to try to find a way to stop this. And all I could really find was kind of like, you know, Wiccan books, you know, like spells and stuff like this. But I did find a book about binding abilities. And so I read this thing, I checked it out, I read it, I got everything that I needed, it said I needed, and I did this whole little ceremony, and from that point on, I had nothing. I wasn't seeing any spirits, this thing was gone, I wasn't seeing it, you know, it was great. And I'm like, so as time went on, and I got, you know, older into my 20s and stuff, the spirits started coming back, but it was spirits of people on the other side basically coming to give me messages. And so that was not too troublesome, but I didn't really want to interact too much because I was afraid if I did, if I started connecting again, that this thing would be able to come back in. And then I had a car accident 11 years ago. And when I had this car accident, I had a near-death experience. And when I came back from it, not only were my abilities back tenfold, you know, the one good thing was that I did not see this demonic thing there. So I was like, great. Well, I never spoke of this demonic entity ever, okay? And I recently went to an Awake and Aware conference in Los Angeles a few months ago. And it had a lot of, like, healers, and, you know, they were dealing with, like, time travel and all this kind of stuff. So I went out there, and, like, the whole, you know, vendor area was all, like, healers and stuff like that. So I walking around, and I had seen this guy who had a bunch of homeopathic oils and stuff. And so I was talking to him, and, you know, he asked me, let me back up for a second. When I came back from my near-death experience, I was brought back because it wasn't my time, but when I was brought back, I woke up in the ICU having the doctors tell me, you know, wow, we lost you. For 3 minutes, your heart stopped, and we saved your life, but we've got bad news for you. During your surgery, we found out that you have a very rare illness with no cure. And you probably have 3 to 5 years, the very most, so you should prepare. So, you know, for being it's not my time to, okay, now you saved me, and now, okay, I'm going to die again. So, once again, I hadn't told anybody about this. So I see this guy, and so I tell him, you know, well, I've got this illness, and, you know, how do you do your oils? And he says, well, we custom make them. And I said, okay, great. And he said, well, come back tomorrow. Give me the name of your illness and come back tomorrow, and I'll see what I can put together for you. And I said, great. And so next to him there was a woman who had a chair with a pad in it and then a massage table with a pad on it to lay down on it. And it was one of those crystal amethyst beds. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever seen them or heard about them, but they've got amethyst crystals that are crushed up and they're lined throughout this pad, and it creates an infrared heat to it. And if you lay on it or you sit on it, it's supposed to kind of energize you, but yet it'll help you to meditate deeper. It will detoxify your system, or they claim all these things. So I sat down on the chair and kind of got a little, you know, like zap. I was feeling like electric shocks going up and down from my head to my toes. And the lady said, you know, oh, what do you think about this? And I told her, and I said, you know what, I couldn't say that it felt good, but I couldn't say it felt bad. It was just different. And so she said, oh, well, you've got to check the bed out. And I said, okay. And so I lay down, and she says, well, you just lay on here for 15 minutes and listen to the meditation, you know, CD, and then tell me how you feel. So I lay down. They put the headphones on me, a mask on me. They cover me up like a little cocoon, and I am listening to something, and then within probably 30 seconds, it seemed, nothing, and then all of a sudden I'm waking up and I'm startled because I don't know where I'm at. It's all dark, and I jump up and, you know, I realize I've got something on my head and my eyes, so I pull them off, and I'm like just sweating like you wouldn't believe, and my heart's pounding, and I don't know why. And this lady looks over at me kind of puzzled, and she smiles and she says, oh, you're awake. And I looked at her and I said, well, what do you mean? And she says, well, how do you feel? And I said, I don't know right now, like, this is really weird. And she says, well, you were so peaceful there. I just went ahead sleeping that I just left you. And I said, well, what do you mean you left me? I said, how long did you leave me laying there? And she says, oh, you've been asleep for about 45 minutes.
Oh.
Now, you're only supposed to be on the thing for 15 intervals. So, and I already have a problem with retaining energy of people, artifacts, things I pick up, touch, anything. If you touch me, I may shock you. I actually have scars in the palm of my hand which open up and bleed, almost like stigmata, because I retain so much energy. And I literally probably go through anywhere from 10 to 12 cell phones a year since the touch screens have come out. I go through a couple laptops. I've even shorted out my car radio and ignition. So for them to leave me on 40 minutes, something just really felt off. And so she says, well, you're probably dehydrated. You know, let me get you some water, and why don't you give me your information? So I said, okay, and I walked over to the table, and I went under and got my purse and got a business card out and wrote down some information and put it back underneath. And I stood up and I walked and I took two steps out, and I felt as if I was hit by a ton of bricks. And then the next thing I know, I'm looking up and I see all these faces looking down under at me saying, ma'am, are you okay? Are you okay? Somebody call an ambulance. Somebody get a doctor. And I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I feel very scared. I don't know what's going on. And the next thing I know, I hear the voice of Sean David Morton, which was one of the UFO speakers at the conference. And I can hear him saying, are you okay? You know, Christina, this is Sean. Are you all right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And so then all of a sudden I see Dr. Dream, which was the man I was talking to at the oils. And he runs over and says, you know, hold on a second, let me talk to her. And he whispers in my ear, are you okay? Is this your illness, or do you think it's something else? And I said, no, I don't think it's my illness. It's something else. And as he's talking to me, he comes out from my ear and from away from me. And I look up and I see above all these people, this demonic entity is there, and he's back. And this is the first time in, you know, 30 years that this thing has been around, and I've never, you know, told anybody about it. So they get me up, and they take me over to lay me down on a massage table. And, of course, we've got all these healers. So all these healers come running to me, right, and they're all trying to put hands on me to heal me and things like that. And I'm literally, I had a couple of them, like, jump back and say, oh, my God, like, she's shocking me. Like, where does all this energy come from? So they tell everybody, like, okay, move back and don't touch her because we're overwhelming her. And next thing I know, Laura Eisenhower, which is the great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower, and she's a psychic, intuitive, and she happened to be there, and this Dr. Dream was actually her husband. And so she runs over, and her husband asks her, you know, look, can you do a tarot card reading for her and see what's going on? And I still, mind you, I haven't said anything about this entity at all to anybody. I'm just keeping it to myself. And she shuffles her cards and she puts them out. And I all of a sudden look at her and her face kind of looks strange. And she says, oh, no. Now, of course, when somebody says, oh, no, it's never a good sign. So she says, the devil card came up, you know. And she's like, well, let me shuffle these again. And she goes, that's not always a bad thing. So she shuffles again. Not only did she shuffle once more, but she shuffled six more times. And each time she shuffled and she put out the tarot cards, it was the exact same cards in the exact same order, with the devil card being the last one.
Oh.
And And she's telling me, she's like, I see that there is a very dark demonic figure that's here with you right now. And she's like, and Christina, this thing has been with you for a long time, is right? And I'm like, and she's just like, all right, let me keep doing the reading. She keeps doing the reading, and she's touching on, like, so many more things that had happened, you know, in my past. And, you know, then she turns around and she lays, you know, the last blow down to me, and says that, you know, it's connected to me because of my ancestors' Masonic connections or Masonic ties.
Mm-hmm.
And which was another thing that nobody else knew, was that recently, probably about 6 years ago, I had went to go to a cemetery of a town here in California that I found out that my family had founded. And so when I went to it, because I didn't grow up with my father, so, you know, I went to go look at it, and I started in the older part of the cemetery. There was a lot of Masonic insignias and stuff on a lot of like headstones, but it was different. It wasn't the regular kind of symbolism. So I did some research and found out, and then actually talked to my dad, and he told me that yes, it was. We did have some very high ranking people in our family, you know, for a lot of generations. And so now we're at a point, the only way they said to really, you know, fix this is, you know, to do a regression and have it removed. So I'm about next week, which is going to be the final part of my book that's coming out, I'm having a regression done, and it's going to be videotaped for this, and we're going to see what other, you know, answers lie with all this stuff. You know, I mean, being somebody with abilities, you know, there's usually a lot of connections, there's a lot of reasonings behind things, and, you know, depending on how much you know about it, or you're even yourself or your own history, it's very surprising what you find out and what can be connected to you and or become attached to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. Man, that's crazy. Just to know that something's been on your family line that long, you know.
Well, in talking to my father and my brothers, because there's nine of us, but there's only three from my mother, and then all of the other ones were afterwards, and they grew up with my dad, but you know, we didn't, and so I didn't really know too much about the whole, you know, family curse that everybody talked about, you know, once I had kind of connected with everybody. And it was something that it was kind of just had passed down from generation to generation, that just because we were in this family, like there was this family curse that followed us. And I mean, every single person in my family, not only have they had bad luck, but they've probably had the worst luck of anybody they know. And, you know, it's just been something that's just kind of everybody's just kind of, I guess, accepted and like, okay, well, this is what happens in our family. But to finally kind of have some answers, it made a lot more sense. And,
right.
You know, I don't know about the Masons now, but I do know that, you know, way back, you know, they did do a lot of, you know, conjuring of, you know, spirits and things like that to, you know, be able to help them have more power and different rankings and different ceremonies. So, you know, I mean, it is 100% possible. So, you know, I myself am very interested because, you know, I've encountered so many different types of paranormal phenomena over the years since, you know, being very young, that it's crazy. I've experienced, you know, haunted dolls. I have, you know, had spirits in my house. I've had this demonic thing that, you know, was me here and there. I had my near-death experience. I've seen UFOs, you know, over the years. And most recently, I had an encounter after leaving a really strange client case that I had. I came home and had an encounter with some black-eyed children. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that, but it's a crazy phenomenon. I wasn't too sure that I had actually had encountered that until yesterday when I went UFON meeting where David Weatherly, who is actually the author of Black Eyed Children, I was able to talk to him, and he was absolutely validated that was probably what I did have, and that he was so interested in what had happened that he has a book coming out next month, and he wanted to rush to get my story in there to be part of it. So
yeah,
have you guys ever heard of that?
Yeah, actually, I growing up, probably about like 5-6 years ago, I used to stay up till like 2 in the morning, reading up on Black Eyed Children. So I've actually read quite a bit on it, and then today I actually read the Google Drive story that you put up.
Oh, okay.
It's a really interesting story. It trips me out because it's not your usual case of Black Eyed Children. It's like you actually got to see the color of their eyes before, you know, they turned around and showed you they were black eyes. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure that what I was experiencing, as I said in my report, that I had, that's what was happening. Because for the research I did on the black eyed children is that they were, for the primarily, they would be these children that, you know, would come to your door or maybe come in to your car, and they would want to get in or come in your house, and, you know, they were very monotone. They didn't have too much to say to, like, interact. They would just be very definite about wanting to come in or wanting to eat. You know, they want you to feed them or something just to get in the house. And when I first, you know, saw these kids, I had a case, this UFO abductee case up in Redding, California, and he had all this paranormal activity. And it was really crazy that day. And so as we were coming back, I finally get home, and I need to go to the store to go get dinner. And so me and my roommate leave, and when we come back, we saw this lady and a little black girl and a little white boy. But what was strange about them is that all of them were pale. But, you know, the one woman, her dress was all, you know, it was kind of like a hippie-ish dress, and it was all wrinkled. And then the little African-American girl, she had shorts on and T-shirts, but they were mismatched. Like, one was like, I know they were patterns, but they were different patterns, so they didn't go together, and different colored shoes. And they were all wrinkled, too. And she was very, very pale, and what I want to say is ashy, as, you know, like when you would, like, need lotion because your skin would be very dry, your skin.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very, very dry. She looked very, very pale, and she had, you know, like circles under her eyes that were very dark. And so, and then this little boy was almost like a milk white. He was crazy white, almost like an albino is what it reminded me of. And he had this really white hair, and he had blue eyes, and they were really piercing blue eyes. And so we pull up, and the three of them are standing on my grass of my house, in front of my house. Now, mind you, I live in a subdivision of tri-story homes, and I live at the very back. I'm on a dead-end street, and I'm backed up to a greenbelt, which has a little hill and a creek and everything. So nobody ever comes down to our house. Like, all of our neighbors are, like, elderly, and I know everybody around here. And, you know, my roommate's one of those people that doesn't like unannounced people to show up or uninvited guests. And so we pull up and we see them all standing there, and they're kind of just staring at us. And so he puts the garage open and he stops and he, you know, looks over there. And I said, "Who is that?" And he says, "I don't know. I thought you knew." And I said, "No." And he goes, "Well, I'm going to go find out." So he gets out of the car. And so I'm sitting in the car watching at this point. And he's probably only six steps from me, so I can see them all very clearly. And he has his hands on his hips, and he's talking to them, asking them, you know, what they're doing there. And I can hear what they say back, but then all of a sudden, he just drops his arms straight to his side. He turns around, and he just walks back, gets in the car, sits down, turns it back on, pulls into the garage, and puts the garage door down without saying a word. And I said, "Well, who is that and what do they want?" And he said, "Oh, they're just looking for some feral cats." And it was so weird because I'm like, "Feral cats? There's no feral cats around here." And I'm like, "Can you believe that?" And he said, "Don't worry about it." And so he gets out of the car and he just walks into the house and he goes downstairs and he goes in his bedroom. And I'm just like it was so weird. I'm just like, "What are you doing?" And so I follow in, you know, behind, and I close the door, and I go upstairs, but it's really bothering. So I walk back downstairs to kind of spy and see what they're doing, right, and see if they're really looking at it for a cat, which I knew they weren't. And I peek out of I got a big window on this next door to my door, my front door, and I look out the blinds, and when I look out, all of a sudden, the three of them are standing in a line on the hillside outside of my house on my grass. And all three of them, as if they could tell that I was peeking out the blinds, they all three in unison turned their bodies and their heads to the back and looked dead at me. And I'm looking at them and I can see that all of their eyes are black. I mean, no whites of their eyes, no nothing, just black. And it scared me so bad that I, like, jump back. I, like, smashed into the door, the closet behind me, and I run downstairs, and I try to get my roommate because I want him to see this, right? So I'm pounding on the door, and I hear some water going, but, you know, his door's locked, and I'm yelling and screaming, but he's not answering me. So I run back to the stairs, and I look again, and, yep, they're still there. So I'm like, "Oh, crap," and I'm really scared, and I'm trying to, like, calm myself down. So I'm thinking, and the first thing I start thinking is, "Jesus Christ, Christina, you're a paranormal investigator. You do this. People call you to come do this stuff for them. How in the hell are you mad? Are you scared right now?" So I like convince myself I'm not scared, and so I look back out again, and at this point, now they're standing at another place in my grass near a tree, and they're standing in a circle, and they're all holding hands, and they're rocking back and forth, and what seems like they're saying some kind of a chant, but I can't hear them. So I come back again, and I'm like, "Okay, screw this." I run downstairs, try to get my roommate again, and he's not there, so he's not answering. So I run back upstairs, and I just decide to open the door and just go out there and confront him. And I'm like, "What are you guys doing? And, you know, do you need something?" And they all of a sudden drop hands. They all look at me. And the woman says, "No, we're done." And they just walk in, and they walk off up the road. And so I'm just like standing there kind of dumbfounded, like, what just happened? And so I turn around and I go into the house and I see my roommate coming up the stairs. And I said, come here, come here. I'm trying to get you. And, you know, they've got black eyes. And, I mean, I was just yelling. I was just telling him all this information. And he's like, where? So we ran out. And I'm literally probably only 30 seconds had elapsed from the time that they started walking, from the time that we run around the corner. And they're nowhere to be found. And I even got in my car and drove around, you know, because there's only one way in and one way out of our subdivision. So I couldn't find anybody anywhere. And I was talking to executive producer of my radio station, and he actually knows David Weatherly. And he said, yeah, it sounds like you had an encounter with the Black Eye kid. And I said, but I don't think so, because I had done the research, and like I said, most of them knock on the door, which didn't happen. And then the other one was that they report the eyes being black, but I hadn't found any reportings of them being able to see their eyes a different color and then them changing. And then
right.
The third one was that I didn't find too many reports of people saying that they were seeing adults that were, the number one was adults, and the other one was that I couldn't find too many reports of that there was a mixture where there was an African-American child as well as a Caucasian child and an adult. So for those reasons, I did not know if it was truly a black-eyed encounter or not. But I know that it scared the crap out of me, and I knew that I wanted to know more than, you know, afterwards. So after talking to David today, you know, as I said, found out that actually those have been reported quite often lately. So it was something that, was, you know, he was very aware of. And, of course, you know, he's been doing this for years and interviewing, you know, hundreds of people. So, you know, he has a lot more information than I did. But once again, you know, it's kind of weird having those kinds of experiences. Being a paranormal investigator and helping other people with paranormal activity and stuff like that, and then have it happening to you, you know, yourself, is a little different sometimes, you know. I mean,
right,
do you guys
right.
get any activity after you guys have finished a case?
Yeah. We went to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital last year, and we got back home, and I want to say for about 2 weeks, my house was a total wreck. Like, it was pretty bad. I had activity nonstop for like 2 weeks.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is being sensitive, you know, people who aren't sensitive, you know, that are just investigating because they want to, you know, get the scientific research, are now reporting that after doing certain cases that they're having their own experiences, you know, themselves at their homes. So, you know, you can only imagine that when you've got, you know, people who out there, you know, that are investigating that are sensitive or, you know, full-blown psychics and things like that, you know, you definitely open yourself up, you know, when you're trying to get rid of something at somebody else's place and having it, you know, end up attaching to you instead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I still have a spirit here in my home. He doesn't mess with me too much, you know, but he followed me home from a case. God, it's been almost 3 years. He's a practical joker. He likes, you know, he died when he was like in his 50s, but every time any of my friends that are sensitive come over, they see a 10-year-old boy up in my hallway, and that's what he appears as. And when he talks to some of them, he talks like a 40 or 50-year-old man, but in a child's body. And we found out that I broke his attachment to the home where he grew up, and he really liked my energy and how my team jokes around and plays jokes on each other and whatnot. So he's stuck around here.
Well, and you know, a lot of people that does happen to. You know, they'll connect with them. A lot of times, I've had women that have come to me, and they'll say, you know, that they went to, you know, a cemetery to, you know, go and do an investigation there, and then the next thing you know, they were over drawn to this one area, which happened to be the children's area, you know, where all the children are buried, and then they come home and then they're reporting seeing, you know, a small child at their house. Well, you know, a lot of times that happens, you know, I mean, a child, maybe spirit may be wandering around, and, you know, being able to connect with the energy of somebody who is, you know, a mother already, they kind of find that attachment, and they'll, you know, kind of replace you. You know, you say, okay, well, I'll, you know, instead of looking for my own mother, you know, you're a mother, so you'll be my new one, and I'll come home with you. Or, like I said, you know, you're trying to get something out of a house, you know, and instead of, you know, instead of you ending up getting rid of it, you know, if you like, come and hang out with you for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
what
as much as I've cleansed this place and saged it and really, you know, spiritually cleansed it, he still stays here. So I told him before, hey, you could pay some rent or do some laundry or something while you're here.
I know, it's like a teenager.
You know, but yeah, and I got a couple questions I'm going to throw your way, because I'm always looking to get other people's perspective, especially when I'm dealing with residential cases. I have one that I worked on Friday night and Saturday this weekend, and she's supposed to be listening. She listened last week and to Terrify Radio, and she really enjoyed it because it started opening herself up a little bit more to what's going on. And basically, in a nutshell, what's going on in this case is the client that I have has pretty much known that they're sensitive, right? Throughout their life, they've had experiences, and what was funny, in a sense, was when she called, she said that, you know, I was asking her questions, and I said, do you feel if someone's in a bad mood, if somebody's pissed off, do you know it without them saying anything? You can feel their energy? And she goes, yes. She said, I could always tell when my mom, what mood my mom was in when she walked in the front door. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I told her, I said, well, you got that empath. You're reading people's energies, right? And she goes, yeah, and if I get upset, I affect everybody that's around me. They all go into the same mood that I am with my energy.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, growing up, you know, her mother kind of, you know, it's this, it's that. You know how mothers do. They try to explain it away. And so she really never had anybody to go to, you know, as whatnot. And now she has children. And the daughter is seeing things. And my friend that is a psychic, he hadn't even figured this one out yet. She's seeing a dark or a black dog in her closet. And what's interesting is we've had another case like that before involving a child seeing a black dog. And when our medium was talking to the spirit that's in the home, the spirit don't even know what it is. He says it shows up for a bit of time, and then it's gone for several months, and then it'll show up again. And that's what's real puzzling to me is what even the spirit that the human spirit that's there that actually helps in a way protect the home and is actually work, you know, he said he'd work out a deal with the client, right, of helping protect the home. He just wants a place to stay because he was buried on the land and lived in a home back in the 1800s, and he's always been there, right? And so I thought that was puzzling. About, have you ever heard of a child seeing a black dog?
Well, I have, and not just black dogs, but a lot of different dogs. And normally what we tend to find is that they seem to be their spirit animal guides, which, you know, we don't just have human spirit. We don't just have spirit guides, you know. I mean, we also have animal spirit guides. And children are more connected with them than anybody else. So you'll see sometimes that the children will report, you know, seeing spirits. You know, the one thing, though, is you get a lot of times when you have old houses, right? You know, the person dies, and say the person died, you know, traumatically or suddenly. What I tend to find out, you know, being a psychic and communicating with, you know, spirits in different cases, is that a lot of times it seems when they go very suddenly that sometimes they don't know that they have passed away. So they are still kind of, they're kind of stuck there, and they're still seeing things the way that they were when they lived there. And so having people there, you know, they sometimes get, you know, agitated and upset because they're like, who are these people and what are they doing in my house? And, you know, why are they moving things and changing things? And you get a lot of things like that. But when you get stuff like that, you know, you don't really want to bargain with them and leave them there because you want to think, too, you know, they're not supposed to really be there. You know what I mean? We want them to cross over. You know, you don't want to leave the spirit there, and he doesn't even realize he's dead. You know, and once you usually let the medium is allowed to let the spirit know that they are not of the living anymore, and these people now live in the house, and it's time for them to cross over, that's usually all it takes.
Yeah, well, this guy here, this spirit, he knows he's dead, and he's very powerful. Energy-wise, and he's actually protected the home and battled some things in the time he's been there. And the thing is, here's the thing with him, we can cleanse him out of the home, right? But we also left it up to the homeowner of what she wants to do. He's not, the experiences that she's had there has been other spirits that have come through because the house is pretty much unprotected in times. And we thought this guy, when he first started coming through and talking, he didn't want to say much to us because he knew what we were capable of doing spiritually and removing him from the place, right? But then when he kind of filled us out, he started talking to us. And he, you know, and then he started talking about different things and instances that have happened in the home, not only with her, but other members of the family, because this is like a family heirloom home that was built by one of the family members and passed down through generation to generation. And,
so you would expect, anyway, for there to be some residual, you know, energy and some spirits there anyway.
Right. But with him, you know, we left it up to the client. We said, look, we can blast him out of here. We can try to get him to cross. But, you know, it's strictly up to you. And so we're going to see. You know, it's one of those things, like we told her, if anytime you change your mind, because we're still working with her. The case ain't even near closed. But with her, a lot of it has to do with her gifts, right? And we told her, you've got to make a choice whether to learn how to control them, learn how to protect yourself, ground, center, all the procedures you have to do when you have gifts. Or she's got to shut it off, right?
Absolutely.
Shut it down. And what she brought up a point with her daughter being sensitive, and she's at the age that when the mother was that age, she's having the same kind of things happen. So her mom's seeing that she's going through the same kind of things that she did, right? So she knows.
Do you mind me asking how old the daughter is?
4.
Okay.
And because that's when the mother started having her experiences, seeing things and feeling stuff. And she, you know, she's at that point where she did, with her mother, she didn't have that, and she wants for her daughter to be able to help her, right? Be able to cope
right.
with that, right? So we're
right.
also helping her through that. And like we told her, it's her daughter's destiny as far as her gifts, whether they continue to grow and she uses them one day or you help her shut them down, right?
Right.
She basically controls where her daughter's path goes in the sense when it comes to those gifts, and that's what we explain to her, you know?
Right. And, you know, there it is one of those things that it is kind of a double-edged sword. I have four children myself, and, you know, three of them are very, very, very intuitive and very gifted. And one of them is completely terrified and doesn't, you know, hates that, you know, I'm even doing any of this. But for your children, you know, my thing was, is I had such a horrible experience because there was nobody to explain this, you know, and so for me, you know, now being grown, you know, I would rather that my children know and understand it. You know, it is a gift. It does seem like a double-edged sword because you don't really have control over the messages you get, what you see, things like that, you know, but you can't do a lot of good, you know, and that's
yeah.
the one thing that I've learned over all these years. I mean, I have truly been able to really help, you know, a lot of people, and the gratitude that they feel when, you know, after I've given them a reading or things like that, you know, and they finally have some answers and some help and they know that they're not alone. It is just so overwhelming to them, and they're so grateful. And, you know, that's for me, that's what makes me continue to do what I do. And that's why not only do I investigate, but, you know, I do mentor the children and also, you know, adults. Because, you know, even though there's more information that, you know, wasn't out there before, now there's a ton of information, but people really don't know which is the right one to use. So I'm able to help, you know, not only the children feel comfortable about talking about it, but I'm also able to, you know, help the parents to know, you know, what kind of things to talk to the kids about at what age and how much, you know, to talk about it and, you know, how to help them through the process so that they don't have to, you know, go through a negative experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does make a big difference. You know, plus I connect these children, you know. I usually start working with them. My youngest one that I work with is 6. And, I have a 4-year-old. But, you know, like I said, at 4 years old, you know, they hold back a lot, you know. Like sometimes they'll want to tell you everything. Sometimes they won't want to tell you anything. But usually, like, you know, between 5 and 6, depending on the way you approach them, you know, about it, they will become very open and be happy to tell you everything that they're seeing and experiencing. So I usually take them about that age, but I also connect the mothers with each other, and I also connect different age group children together over, you know, Facebook and Skype, so that they do, like, little conference calls and stuff like that, so that, you know, the older children have somebody else to talk to along the way that's just like them.
That's
so
good.
It really does, you know, it's a big help for, you know, not only the kids, but for the parents as well. And what was something that just started out because I would, you know, I started getting a lot of clients that had, you know, children that were reporting activity and being able to see spirits. And then we're going through this shift, and we've been going through it the last couple of years. And we've seen an increase of not only children reporting, you know, different sightings and being able to connect and communicate with the spirits and see them, but we're also having a lot of adults between the ages, you know, of like 30 and up that, you know, were kind of in that generation where, once again, it was kind of a taboo to talk about it, you know. So what started is I thought, okay, well, I can take a couple of people and mentor them, you know. Became, you know, it seemed like every case I had children that had abilities or had an adult that had abilities that was really lost and kind of needing some help because they didn't really know which direction to go and how you should do it. People say, you know, do protection, do grounding, and, you know, and connect with your spirits, and they don't, nobody knows what that means. That's one of the first questions I get is like, you know, what's the best way to better connect with the spirit? Well, the very best way, number one, is to start meditating. Meditation, for one, is able to take you into a very deep meditative, almost altered state where we use a different part of our brain, and it opens up. And you, once you start doing that and you start, you know, asking questions, you start getting answers back. And, you know, I've worked with people who have had, you know, abilities where they could just sense people. And a year later, you know, these people are reporting that they literally are not have developed to the point where they can literally see and receive messages. And now, mind you, I just don't take people at their word for, you know, saying, oh, yes, now, you know, I've been mentoring under you and now I can see spirits. I literally test these people on a regular basis. And, like, one of the things is I'll say, okay, so you're able to do this. All right. And I will just say, come to my house. And I will take them to a random place that I know has spirits. And I will have them walk around and do a dry reading. And when they can do it in literally every single time, they can, they're right on. You know, to me, obviously, they're connecting and something's working. And, you know, they're very, very connected. So, you know, having those kind of things, and you see a lot more children who do have abilities as they start to get older, especially nowadays, that become very severely depressed. If they don't have some, you know, information and some support and some guidance, you know, around them about what's happening. Because kids already feel awkward and, you know, not the same as everybody anyway. And, you know, kids can be super cool, we know. And, you know, children and teenagers take that, you know, very, very hard. So, you know, getting them to understand it and embrace it and understand to control it and what it is, I think is the best way to do it. Because even though they may say, okay, we want to bind your abilities, look, I bind it, you know, bound my abilities, and look, you know, they ended up coming right back. So, you know, it's better to, instead of trying to deny, you know, what these blessings that she's been given, these abilities that she has, you know, she should try to encourage her daughter and teach her and just take it little by little, just as you do with any child of any information you give to them. Give them what you feel they can understand and can embrace.
Yeah, and I even told her, I told the mother that, you know, if the an entity, she sees an entity in her closet and freaks out next time, get her out of the room, and then you as the mother, the protector, go in there and go at it, you know, tell her whatever's there to go, you know, leave my daughter alone, da-da-da-da. And it'll also show her daughter that she can come to her whenever she has these types of experiences and that her mother has her back on it. And I said, just little subtle things like that will go a long way. And then at some point, you know, don't tell her that ghosts don't exist, but don't tell her that they do until she gets older where she can wrap her mind around it, you know.
Correct.
And like you said, just a little bit at a time. And, you know, for the mother, we're working with her to get rid of that fear that she has about her gifts, right? And, because she's never had anybody put it in perspective and people to come in actually acknowledge that she does, right? Because when I brought my friend the second night that's a medium, I told him absolutely nothing about anything with the case, and I told the client that, and one of the first things he said to her was, you have a gift, you know? So she was floored. Because he could, you know, he could pick off her energy and tell that she had that. And so that was confirmation to her. So now it's working on that fear, right? And I told her, I said, it's a lot of knowledge, a lot of education. And I said, one thing that would really help you is start listening to the radio shows and listen to the guests and their experiences in the paranormal, whether they have gifts or not. and relate it to your own life. And I said, that'll help you, and that'll give you some more knowledge and reassurance that you're not the only one, you know?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and once again, too, if she needs later in time, if, you know, she can always, you can always, you know, refer her over, you know, to us as well. Because, you know, this is what we do as far as the mentoring on being able to help the parents connect and be able to better help their children. You know, and that's what we do. So, you know, it's great. And, you know, I'm so glad that there are other teams out there that are really going the extra mile, because there's so many more aspects of being a paranormal investigator than just going and out and being able to prove that there's something in somebody's house, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, you become a counselor, you know. I mean, you wear so many different hats in this. And, you know, once again, a lot of our fear is we're scared of the dark. We're scared of the unknown. Whatever is not, you know, familiar to us is scary to us. And so, you know, it's just really making somebody kind of change the way they see things. And that little change, you know, has a big effect. You know, if you understand that when things come flying off of the shelf, or you have maybe the lights are going on or off. If you actually realize how much energy it takes for spirits to actually do all this stuff, you know, I mean, it takes a lot to be able to, you know, they're really trying to get your attention if they throw something off of out of a cupboard or something like that. So, you know, if you realize these and you have a little bit of knowledge, you know, and I always say knowledge is power, because, you know, once you've got that information, it can change everything completely. And so you can go from being terrified to empowered, you know, in a very short time.
Right. And, you know, with the client's mother, we're educating her more on, she's kind of on the fence, you know, as whether to understand this or go with what she's always known in her religious beliefs, right? And so we introduced her to a lot of things in the Bible, different scriptures, and had her read that. And boy, she started to really realize, you know, because until you really looked into the scriptures and really analyzed it and really put yourself into these apostles that wrote these excerpts and see what they were writing about. And we showed her that, and she's just like, whoa, I never noticed that before. And we're like, see, you know? And so we're opening the client's mother, you know, to the possibilities that are out there, right? And not to be so straight-minded with her beliefs, right? We're not telling her to change her beliefs, but we're showing her a different side, right?
Correct.
Because that's
correct.
What we do. We don't go in and put our beliefs on anybody, but we just take what everybody knows, right? Everybody has a Bible, and tell them to read some scriptures and see what they think. Right?
Right.
And it helps out a lot. And like you said, we wear many hats. I know that last night we were there from 6 o'clock in the evening to 10:30 at night, and we didn't investigate one time. Our friend did a reading of the home, and then the rest of the time we sat down with the client and talked for 4 hours on different things that she can do, different possibilities. What does she want to do with the home? Does she want us to cleanse it, push everything out, seal it up? You know, or, you know, get a game plan together, the whole nine yards. So, yeah, a lot of folks want to go in blazing with BDRs and all that stuff. We try to really focus on the people involved, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and, I mean, that's what we should be doing. As I said, if people, you know, are just out there just for the video evidence, you know, they want to go set up their cameras and stuff, like, again, once I said, you know, go to, there's hundreds of thousands of places all over the world that you can go, of locations that are well known to be haunted. So go set your cameras up there and do whatever you want to do there, you know, for the sake of getting a picture or something. You know, that's what people don't understand, is that, you know, true paranormal investigators, we're here for the research and to find out, you know, the truth and get that out to people. But we also deal with real life families who are, you know, when they come to us, they're at their last wit's end. They don't know what to do. You know, these people have really been tormented to the point that they're coming to complete strangers. And I'm sure that you know, when you get people who contact you, because I get them that contact me all the time, and they start their story out with, I know this is probably going to sound really crazy, but it's true. I swear, I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
Every time, yeah. Every time. And I always tell people, you know, oh, no, you know, actually probably the crazier it sounds, the more I'll believe it. You know, I mean, because it is. It's like the ones that just sound so completely, you know, crazy, and then you get there and you realize, like, this stuff is going on. You just think, oh, my gosh. I sometimes think, you know, I can see them, but I am so glad that, you know, I don't have to live in some of these situations.
Yeah.
Because it'd be horrific, you know, because one of the other things now, like you were saying that, you know, you've got stuff in your house, but you've tried to sage and cleanse and all this stuff, and you can't get rid of it. I will tell you exactly why you can't get rid of it, is because you're doing it yourself. Okay, it is attached to you, and that is your home. You cannot cleanse your own home when you've got something. Now, when people periodically will cleanse it, you know, just to try to keep things from coming into the house, you know, or if you're investigating a lot, you know, just trying to keep it cleaned out, when you actually get something that's attached to you and it comes back, you know, it's just like a psychic, you know, not feeling they're psychic because they can't read for themselves and make their own good decisions. We're too personally involved in them. That's why it doesn't work. That's why when we get clients, and you'll get a lot of clients that have gone on the internet and said, well, you know what, I've tried to do a saging, and I did this little, you know, thing that I printed up on the internet that says it'll get rid of ghosts, and, you know, all these kind of things. It's the same kind of thing. They can't get rid of their own stuff either. That's why if
your
team comes out, a lot of times it will work. So if you probably had your team come in and cleanse your house for you, then this thing would be gone.
Yeah.
But I don't really know that you really want it to be gone either. You're completely...
If I had my team come in and cleanse it, I would actually make Jeff actually clean my house.
Well, maybe you could take two for one.
I ain't damn, mate.
Your people are special. A cleanse is a cleanse.
You know, it's interesting to say that. Even with cleansing, there are so many freaking teams or just people that get on the internet and think they know how to do that. But I've gotten a case before that a team had gotten before us, and of course we had to clean up the mess. But one of the messes was, they did not know the proper ways of cleansing a home, and what they did was they put salt, you know, in the doors, the windows, and all of that. They didn't worry. They guess they thought that would push the entities out. What they did was they sealed the house and kept the spirits in the house.
Absolutely. Now, the thing is, I mean, even when I do the cleansings, you know, we'll do the saging, the salting, and sometimes even oiling it you know, to seal a home if we need to. But as we go through one by one, you know, we sage it, then we salt it, then we seal it, then we close the door, we go to the next one, and then push it, you know, go from counterclockwise and push it all out to the very the front from where we start. So, but once again, like you said, a lot of people don't know that, and they just go in and just, you know, start putting salt down everywhere and, you know, do it all backwards or out of order or the wrong order. And now, like you said, you seal this thing in with them. So thank you so much for that. You know, I mean, the client's going to love you for that one.
Yeah. They were like, well, they said they helped. They put salt down. I'm like, that's all they did? Yeah. Oh, no.
Right. And, you know, that's what just really bothers me so much. And I mean, I used to even hear, you know, I'm in Sacramento, California, and I used to, at the beginning, I was doing a paranormal investigating 101 class for free, and I was offering it to people, and I literally had a lot of people coming, like, you know, every time I did this class, and I was doing it like once, twice a month, and because, you know, there were so many people wanting to start groups, and they had no idea, like, even what they needed to do. And so, you know, I was glad that they were coming and participating and getting the information before they were going out trying to take cases on. But then with the amount of people who did come and show up, I just thought about how many hundreds or thousands of others who don't, that just watch these shows and just think that, you know, watch a few clips and that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm. I have a question to ask.
Sure.
Can we please find a way to make sage smell like something other than marijuana? It was a conference in Jefferson, I guess a couple of years ago now, and as we were leaving, Kevin and a bunch of the other members just put that stuff all over them, and I nearly threw up.
Well, are you sure it wasn't marijuana? Because I'll tell you, I've been to a few conferences myself, and it wasn't sage that they were having coming out of those rooms.
Yeah.
More and more every year.
I admit, I used to smoke that stuff years ago, but it's been a long, long time. And now, whenever I'm around anything that even remotely resembles that smell, I get sick to my stomach.
Well, you know, the thing that people don't realize is that you don't have to use sage. You can go and get incense right from the store, and there's certain ones that work best, you know, better than others, like sandalwood and there's different ones that they have. But it doesn't have to be sage, you know, and the same thing. It also depends on what your client's religious beliefs are, you know,
yeah.
And so it is very detailed. You know, each client is different, and you can't just go on the internet and say, okay, I want a cleansing, and you know, then you go to a Jewish family's home and you do a Catholic cleansing. You know, it's like it's not going to work. So, you know, you really want to make sure that when you're doing these things, and once again, that you're taking on private clients, that you are educated about, you know, what to do and the different ways to do it and the correct way to do it. You know, so that you don't, you know, and the alternatives. So that if somebody is, there's a lot of people that don't like the smell of sage. I get it a lot, and I will tell people that, you know, I've got different, we have different ways of doing the cleansings, you know, all these different things. And, you know, one of the things on our questionnaire is we ask what, you know, religious beliefs that they follow, you know, so that we make sure that when we go to them that we have everything that, you know, needs to be done. Because, you know, if it happens to be, say, a Christian household, you know, opposed to, you know, like a American Indian, you know, family or something where you need to do traditional, you know, their traditional cleansing. See, that's another thing, too, is like out here in California, and I don't know about where everybody else is, but we have this is the gold country. We had a lot of Indians. We had a lot of massacres here. Stuff like that, and we've had a lot of Indian burial grounds. And in fact, I did an investigation last year sometime. I had found one that had not been noted on a map since like the early 1900s, but I was able to get it, and it was happened to be across from now what is a junior college, and there's a little park that they've made next to it, and a parking lot, but you can tell from the aerial shots that where this Indian burial ground used to be, that they had strategically built everywhere around it except for that area. But it wasn't marked on any of the current maps as an Indian burial site. So I figured I'd go out there and check it out and take a look. And boy, I was fixing around there, and then all of a sudden, right away, I start seeing these Indians, and I'm like, okay, I know we're close, you know, this is the area. And I could see them, they were showing me like pictures like down along the creek where they're like washing some clothes and doing some stuff, and I see them having some like animal slings, you know, that they've got, people are laying in between these trees and stuff like that. And so we started taking pictures and all this stuff, and all of a sudden I started not feeling so good. And so I said, I gotta go sit down, or I gotta go. Maybe it's the heat, but something's going on. And mm-hmm. So we had one more place on the list of that we were supposed to go, which was this cemetery that wasn't too far away from where we were at. So the two investigators I were with said, well, let's run, go to the cemetery real quick, and then we'll go get some lunch, because maybe it's because you haven't eaten. So I said, okay, let's do that. And I get to the, we drive up to the, I'm feeling okay the farther I'm getting away from the location we were at. But the closer that we get to the cemetery, I start feeling really, 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 like, nervous, sick to my stomach, not good. And as we pull in the gate, I literally hear somebody scream to me saying, no, stop, don't go through. And I made them stop. And I said, we got to go. We got to get out of here. Whatever is here with us does not want us in here. So we backed up. We went to lunch. And we're sitting in this little Mexican restaurant. And then out of nowhere, behind the booth where we're the booth that we're sitting in, appears these two Indian men with the, you know, loincloth and, you know, the feathers and, the, you know, face paint and stuff. And I'm literally looking at them, and all of a sudden one of my investigators says, you see something, don't you? And I say, yes. And all of a sudden we see this little flash, like, light that comes out of the wall. And they say literally goes down into my, like, the top of my head. And when it does, I get this almost movie vision of me and these two investigators that we're now back at the location we were at the first place. And that there were these, what I thought were acorns, or but they were kind of like, I don't know, like gourds or something. I don't know. But they were on these trees. And I see myself gathering them. And then I go and I put them in a little pile in front of this tree that I had touched earlier in the day. And from what I was getting, they were very upset with the fact that we had came and we were just kind of traipsing all over their grounds, and that we didn't give any kind of an offering or any kind of anything like that. So I immediately tell them what I see, and I'm like, we got to go, like, right now. Let's get our food, pack it up. You know, we've got to go back to the first location. So we go there, and I literally go pick these things up right where I see. I picked them up before. I put them in a pile. I put them in front of the tree. I, you know, say a little saying, you know, to give an offering to them, and I didn't mean to disrespect them, because I was supposed to bring the rest of the team and about 14 guests to this place the following day. And the last thing I wanted was something bad to happen. So to make sure, I go and I get some tobacco to give as a, we have sage, we got tobacco, and I forgot what else we had, but we had something else to give as offering, you know, so when we were going to go as a group, we wouldn't have any problems. And we're walking down the path, and I said, okay, everybody got everything, and, you know, the one lady's like, check, I've got the tobacco, the other one, check, I've got the sage, check, the other one has the other thing. And I said, okay, well, bring them to me. And so I stop, I turn around to wait for them to get to me. And the one lady gives me the one thing, the one lady gives me the other thing. But the lady who had the tobacco all of a sudden says, where did it go? And I find it anywhere. She literally had just showed it to me. And so we took the flashlights and everything, and we're looking, and we can't find anything. And next thing I know, I see this Indian guy standing there holding the tobacco, basically telling me thank you. And, you know, we went there. We actually got a lot of evidence, had a great, you know, experience. But, you know, if you, with the American Indians, it seems like it's very much when you do stuff that has any kind of American Indian spirit, you know, involved in it, that it is about, offerings and, you know, certain ceremonies that have to be done. And sometimes you may even have to go get a tribal elder to come and you know, do the cleansing or whatever that needs to be done in order to get rid of something.
Nice.
So every case is very different. You know, you never, it depends on what you're dealing with. you know, and, you know, what the family believes in, because once again, you know, faith has a big, big part in all this. You know, if you believe that, you know, that good can, you know, overcome evil, you know, then you can, you know, take this stuff on, you know, with the help of, you know, people who know what they're doing and take your home back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people
yeah.
don't have to come victim of this kind of stuff and, you know, leave. Because a lot of times people think that they can just leave a house and the activity will stop. And I know that I've seen myself with a lot of clients that sometimes it's not attached to the house. Sometimes it's attached to the people there. And or it may not be attached to the people, but a lot of times it's attached to items. And we're seeing this a lot now because with the economy, a lot more people are now going to garage sales, thrift stores, swap meets to save money. And a lot of things, especially jewelry, secondhand jewelry, things like that, everything contains energy. So a lot of times when you get something that somebody else has had and you bring it home, then you will start to notice that you start to have activity happen in your house. So a lot of times you can ask them, you know, have you brought anything new into the house recently? And a lot of people, like I said, are doing this. I actually right now I've got a Ouija board that was causing all kinds of activity. I've got two haunted South American tribal statues that are supposed to be gods of possession that were terrorizing some people, and now I've got some darn haunted dolls, which I can't, I've got my own problem, you know, with in the past, and I've now turned into, like, my garage is now turned into the haunted collector, you know, museum, and I'm just like, how, what in the heck am I doing, you know, keep bringing this stuff home, but, you know, what else am I supposed to do, you know, I can't just say, okay, I know what's wrong, and I know what the activity is coming from, but, you know, hey, I'm just going to have to leave it here. I'm not taking it with me. I'm supposed to be the professional. So, you know, they're looking at me to, like, come and get it. That's like if you, you know, if you've got a skunk or something in your backyard, you know, you're not going to go try to get it yourself. And, you know, if the trapper just comes out and gives you a trap and then, you know, you trap it, what the heck are you going to do with it? So, you know, you expect whoever you're calling to fix the problem. You know, so I'm fixing it. I don't know that my family likes too much that I'm bringing this stuff home because the other night, we happened to be sitting here with my two daughters, and they came home around 11, 12 o'clock, and they came in and closed the door, came upstairs, or locked the door, came upstairs, and about an hour later, we're just sitting there talking about what, you know, what they had done during the day, and all of a sudden, we hear the door deadbolt unlock, and the handle turn, and our front door open, and we're upstairs so we can see the light from the porch. As the door opens, we can see it illuminate up to the top story. And at first, we all looked at each other, and they started to get scared, and I didn't want them to get scared. So I was like, well, hold on. You know, it's probably nothing. Maybe the door just blew open or something. And, you know, my one daughter's like, no, I know it can't be that because I locked it, and we heard that deadbolt turn and it unlocked. And so I said, well, maybe it's my roommate, you know, so I go run downstairs. But, no, it wasn't either. So, you know, I get a lot of stuff from here at my own house.
Well,
one of the advantages of investigating.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, we're down to the last 10 minutes of the show, Christina. You got upcoming events that you're going to be at, speaking, or and also your contact information in your radio show. You got lots of things.
Oh, yeah. So, well, first of all, we'll start out with my radio show. It's Paranormal Connections, and it's on the Sceptre Radio Network. And you can also go to Facebook and go under Paranormal Connections. And it's on Monday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And, you know, I talk about all things paranormal. So we really touch on everything. Also, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, everything. You can find me under my email address, which is paranormalinvestigator916@gmail.com. And add me. Also, you know, you can find my group, which is PPRS, with the Psychic Paranormal Research Society, and we're out of Sacramento, California. And so if anybody out there, you know, has abilities, has children that are talking about their seeing spirits, you know, if you need some guidance on how to deal with your children with abilities, you know, or have a sighting, a reporting, or need some help, you know, feel free to get a hold of us. And I want to thank you guys also very much for having me on the show. I always appreciate, you know, talking to you.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely great always having you on, Christine, and hopefully we'll get you back on later in the year and see how things have been going with you. Also, yeah, probably be talking to my client and suggest to also, you know, contact you that way that she can get some more help with her daughter and her own abilities as well.
Absolutely. We'd be happy to help. You know, it's not only myself, but, you know, my whole investigative team are all comprised of, you know, psychics and people with abilities, and they have children themselves. So, yeah, you know, we've got a very good network going over, you know, over there. So, definitely.
Awesome.
Always happy to help.
Yeah, and that's the way we are, too. So, yeah, it's good to see other folks in our field that are out there for the betterment of the public and, you know, these clients.
Well, like I said, I'm not there to get famous, and, you know, I'm not there to get rich. I'm out there to really, you know, help the people who, you know, need the help and to get the information out. And those are what I'm, you know, focused on doing, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. So I work with everybody who is, you know, not into all the drama and backstabbing, and we know that there's a lot of that, but, you know, I just try to stay focused and positive and try to work with people who are truly out there trying to help other people like I am.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you have a wonderful evening and have a great Memorial Day tomorrow.
You too. You too.
All right. Well, Christina, you have a great night.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. Good night, everyone.
All right.
Hey, good night.
Good night. All right. That was Christina George, everyone, psychic medium and paranormal investigator. And so, yeah, man, great show.
Yeah, she has a lot of interesting stories, man. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, every week we have somebody that throws out stories or ideas or theories or whatever it may be that none of us have ever heard. So it just goes in the database with all the other stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think this is the first guest that I was a part of that talked about black-eyed kids. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Jeff's been kind of quiet. I don't know what he's up to over there.
I had a few beers.
Wow.
Oh,
he can't even speak.
I was going to say, can you say that again, but enunciate this time?
a few beers. And also give me time to marinate the ribeyes for tomorrow.
Nice.
Oh, I have a special announcement to make as well, because I'm going to be making an appearance tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to be appearing outside of my house tomorrow grilling these ribeyes.
Oh, Lord.
That sounds like bad news, man. That's one thing I've learned growing up, like city life. Anytime you grill something, people are always bound to stop by. They're like, what's up? Hey, haven't we been friends for like 6 months? You're like, no, we have not. Go on with your life.
Exactly. Just to give you an update on this week, I know Terrify on Tuesday, Jody was gone last week, and she'll be back this Tuesday. We're having a guest on that show that we had on this show a year or two ago, Alexandria Holzer, the granddaughter of Hans Holzer, will be on Terrify Radio Tuesday. So It's always a pleasure to talk with her and get her ideas and theories on things. So, and on this show next week, which will be the first weekend in June. God, this year's going by. June 2nd, we'll have Chris Dedman, paranormal investigator. I interviewed him last week on Terrify, and man, he's got some great insight on lots of things in the paranormal. And been on several shows. He's been on Paranormal State, the episode I Am Six, and Ghost Adventures, and My Ghost Story. So, be a great time to talk with Chris. And what else? Oh, East Texas Ghost Con. Damn it, Jeff, you still haven't made a commercial.
You haven't sent me the script.
You can write a script. All I got to do is tell you who's coming,
and you can
do the rest.
Just, you haven't done that. I don't just automatically know who's going to be there.
You should know this. We will be announcing not next Sunday, but the following Sunday, the 9th, we'll announce our headliner, and that will complete our lineup. But East Texas Ghost Con, October 5th for the public. For us, the paranormal investigators and the speakers, we will be gathering on the 4th, on a Friday, for a private party paranormal karaoke. That Jeff will miss out on. Thank goodness I don't have to hear him sing.
No.
But you
know I can sing.
Do we have to go back to this? Martin, we told him once before he is not the X Factor.
I'm bigger than the X Factor.
Oh, man. I think I'm the X Factor.
Well, anyway, October 5th, East Texas Ghost Con in Marshall, Texas, in Northeast Texas, our neck of the woods, and it's pretty easy to get to. It's right off of I-20, so you know where I-20 is. But you can find all the information about the event, what's going on. There's lots of things that are going to be going on at this event, different things. You can kind of pick and choose and make a package deal if you don't want the VIP tickets. But go to www.easttexasghostcon2013, all one word, .eventbrite.com for more information on tickets. Tickets are on sale now. And you get a better deal if you pre-purchase them online than you will at the door, because they're going to be more expensive at the door.
Nice.
And Martin Bravo will be there, and I'm sure he will have his camera strapped to himself and taking lots and lots of photographs.
Oh, you know I will.
And Jeff will not be there, so the paranormal patriot, you'll have to wait to see another time.
Hey, can I tell everybody what happened to me yesterday?
Go for it. We've got a few minutes left. Go for it.
I got followed by Secret Service yesterday.
What?
And this is not like, you know, me being tipsy and making up a stupid story. No, this really happened. You know, I live like 20 or 30 miles from Crawford, Texas, and George W. Bush has a ranch just outside of Crawford. And he was in town this weekend for some kind of bike ride event or something. Well, anyway, yesterday morning I decided I was going to drive out there just to see if I knew exactly where the ranch, or what, at least where the turnoff to the ranch was. And I get to Crawford, I turn down the county road that goes to his ranch. And I get about 100 yards down that road, and I look in the rearview mirror, and there's a big black SUV following me.
Nice.
And they followed me all the way up to the turnoff for the ranch. And of course, I just drove past it. I had no intention of trying to drive up there. I'm not stupid. And they got about 50 yards past it following me, and they stopped and turned around.
That's crazy. I wonder what happened. Like, say, I don't know, say for some odd reason you had to stop, what would have happened, you know?
I was a little concerned because I was getting low on gas, too.
Uh-oh. Oh, man.
I thought about stopping just to see what they would do. Well, more than likely, they got some high-powered machine guns, or at least high-powered firearms, and the most expensive, the best weapon I got is the, Burger King bag I just emptied.
Nice. That's a slow death.
Here, 500 of these at once, and you will die in 3 weeks.
Oh, man.
One last thing real quick before we go off the air. June 25th, it's a Tuesday. It's the one-year anniversary of Terrify Radio and the one-year anniversary of Unknown Radio Network, where it all started when we started adding shows. We will have all the hosts of every show on air at the same time.
Including,
so get ready for lots of laughter. Lots of laughter.
What's the announcement for Jody's thing?
Do what?
What's the announcement for Jody's thing?
I don't know if she'll talk about it Tuesday or not, but she's got some really, really cool things in the works. Just tune in to Terrify, Jody back on air, so if she wants to reveal those, what's going on, she can do that. It's also involving another host of Unknown Radio Network. Brittany Johnson of Into the Darkness is also involved in the news as well. So two people from our network. You just have to stay tuned to find out. It's something really cool for them. A great opportunity. So
I want
you to tune in and find out.
I want in. Whatever it is, I want in.
Well, unless you're I can't even say, sorry. I'll talk about it once it's revealed, then I can actually make fun of you again.
You don't get to make fun of me again.
But anyway, June 25th is going to be a great celebration. All the hosts will be on. Justin said he's getting his guitar ready for that night and cold beer. And Kevin. And, of course, Matt, man, it's just going to be a crazy, crazy night. We're going to... Not only our show, we're going to try to get some...
I'm sorry, I had to.
Not only are the other shows, but we're all going to try to get some past guests that have been on our shows to call in. We're not going to interview them, but, they can chime in the craziness, the chaos. Make fun of Jeff, whatever they feel like doing, show the love to the Unknown Radio Network. So that's what we're going to do.
I'm going to pick my past guest right now.
But it probably won't be all centered around Jeff because everybody on the network is pretty crazy in their own way, and we'll probably be laughing about just about everything. Mark will be on the show, so he can't really prank call us, but there's no telling if he would get somebody else to do it for him.
I'm going to pick Martin to be my past guest that comes on the show, because Martin at one point was a guest on our show.
Yes.
That doesn't count, because he became a host.
But you got to be clear with these rules.
Oh, man. So anyway, we'll probably be playing drinking games that night. So if you want to chime in with that, you can as well.
All right.
We should try to get as many people to call in as we can to crash the show. How fun would that be?
No, I don't want to have that happen. I've had too many shows crash already, and we didn't even do anything to it.
Oh, man.
We could take up to 50 callers, by the way. We could take up to 50 callers at once.
I think I'm going to have people call in. I'm going to have 25 people call in that night.
Oh, God.
I'm going to have Nick Roth call in and admit that they fake things on the show.
That's not going to happen. No worries. Well, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Jeff, do you have a song to get us out of here?
Yes, and I apologize for last week because we usually close out with cool music.
So that's what you get for me selecting the music.
This week we're going to close out with Skid Row, I Remember You. Happy Memorial Day, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.